Narada Muni, after speaking to Prithini Barishad, and after explaining to him or describing to him the perils that await the Paranjana, which is every embodied soul. And what is the peril? It means we should know, or he explained this, and we should also know that this gross body that we're so attached to, this composed of the earth, water, fire, air, and ether, we're so attached to it, and we think it is us, but it is doomed. Doomed to what? Doomed to be crushed into dust through the passage of time. And how much suffering we are lining ourselves up for because of this identification with the body. And this is one of the great jewels or great benefits of being born in India, especially when connected deeply with the Vedic cultures, automatically. Everyone understands they are not the body. Everyone understands the law of karma. And there's no need to convince anyone, practically speaking, that this isn't me. And everyone understands that I've achieved this position due to my activities in a previous life and my next life activities. My next life's activities are determined by what I'm doing right now. And that tends to temper how one acts in one's life and what considers worthwhile doing and what one considers unworthwhile or inappropriate or dangerous. So after hearing this about the gross body, the death of the gross body, and it's inevitable, Prachini Barishad asked the question, since this body dies and we have to accept another body, what is it that is carried from one body to the next? Because the thing that has committed the good or bad activities turns into dust. So what carries one body or us from one body to the next? An astute question. So Narada Muni begins, starting in text 60 and going almost to the end of the chapter, he begins to describe the transmigration of the soul. Now, in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains this in text 7 through perhaps 11. He explains the science of transmigration in a very concise way. I'll read that, and then we shall hear Narada Muni's explanation, and it is such an important explanation at that. It is, in one sense, it is the key to spiritual life, and Prabhupada's purports will reveal that. But here is the explanation in grief. Grief, yes, that's what it usually is, but in brief also. The living entity, Shariram Yara Vapnoti, Yachap Ukramri Shwara, Grihitvitani Samyati, Vaya Gandhani Vashayat. Gaya Vandan, Vaya Gandhani Vashayat means as the air carries the fragrance of the aroma of whatever it's crossing over. So similarly, the subtle body carries with it the consciousness, depending upon what the consciousness of a person is focused on. At the time of death, the subtle body will actually carry that to the next body. So the translation of aid is, the living entity in the material world carries his different conception of life from one body to the other. Conception means the mental conception, just as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. Text 9. The living entity, thus taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch. In other words, the gross body and its components, the senses, which are grouped about the mind. They are carried by the mind. He thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects. So what do we immediately understand from that of great importance? Yes. Okay, good.
One thing that changes and another thing that doesn't change.
And what's the thing that changes?
The gross body.
And the mind, in one sense, it doesn't change. In another sense, it does change. It does change just in the same way that the air, it change, the air is the same, but depending upon what it's going over, if it's going over the kamani bush, it takes on a very, very spicy and sweet fragrance. If it goes over the sewage, it takes on another, a horrible, terrible odor. We won't even call it a fragrance, it's an odor. So the air is the same, but depending upon what it goes over. So what is, and Prabhupada's going to bring this point out so many times in the purports. What's the conclusion, therefore, for spiritualists, especially for devotees? And that's on the negative side, and on the positive side, fill your mind, because association will fill the mind with one thing or another, either garbage and wastewater or fragrant flowers. So this point will come up and we'll read about it. So Krishna continues to explain this. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. 11, the final verse in this. The endeavoring transcendentalists who are situated in self-realization can see all this clearly. So on one hand, the foolish can't see it at all. But the spiritualist, even if one is endeavoring, he can understand this, and therefore he is so careful. But those whose minds are not developed and who are not situated in self-realization cannot see what is taking place, though they may try. Now, that was in four verses a concise explanation of what Narada Muni is going to explain in quite a few verses here, in 19 or 20 verses. Interestingly enough, the same science of transmigration is explained by Vasudev to Kamsa. He tells him the same thing. When Kamsa grabs Devaki by the hair, is about to kill her, he starts to explain about the transmigration of the soul. In other words, if you do this horrendous thing, if you kill your own sister on the day of her wedding, such a horrible, disgraceful thing, what will be your future? And he also explains that what happens to us in this life is inevitable, in the sense, it's the sense of it being a product of what happened to us, what we did in our previous life. So what is there to be so disturbed about? One is just reaping the fruit of one's karma. So he also explains it there. But now we'll hear what Narada Muni says. This is text 60. The great sage Narada continued in answering Pachini Barishat's question. The living entity acts in a gross body in this life. And it's what when the word gross, there's certain subtle, hidden, not hidden, but subtle connotations to the word. What is it? Anyone have the dictionary? a dictionary. What does gross mean in the dictionary? Because we say a gross body, and it's the opposite of a subtle body. The subtle body is headed by the mind.
Big, fat, and coarse-looking.
Big, fat, coarse-looking?
Corpulent.
Corpulent means fat. It's gross.
Burly.
Huh?
Burden.
Burly.
Burly.
It's a more.
Very flagrant, very bad.
Very bad. It's gross. It's low.
Dense, thick. Lacking in refinement or perception.
Lacking in refinement. Lacking in perception. The gross body cannot, because it's gross, it cannot perceive anything to do with reality. Even though it may try. As Krishna explained. That's all? That's all the insults?
Insensitive.
Dull.
Oh.
Vulgar.
Of
course, obscene, a gross body. So when we say, oh, everyone has a gross body, this is what we actually mean, all these terms. It's gross. It's dull. It's coarse. It's insensitive. It's non-perceiving. So the living entity acts in a gross body in this life. So the living entity is fine and subtle and meant to be acting with Krishna in the spiritual world. But he's in a gross body in this life. And he's in another gross body in his next life. And this body is forced to act by the subtle body, sukshma sarira, the subtle body, which is composed of mind, intelligence, and ego. So within the gross body is a subtle body. The gross body is composed of earth, water and air, fire and ether. And the subtle body is the mind. It actually fills the gross body. The subtle body fills the gross body. Because we can see this. Because with very little effort, I can move my mind down to my fingertips. With very little effort. And with very little effort, I can move my consciousness through the mind down to my toes, to the top of my head, to the tip of my nose. So it's filling, the subtle body is filling the gross body. And the subtle body is forcing. We don't look at it this way because we see a complete harmony between the gross body and the subtle body and ourselves. We see it all as me, but it isn't all me. The gross body is being forced to act by the subtle body. And after the gross body is lost, and this is his answer to the question of how the transmigration takes place, when the gross body is lost, the subtle body is still there to enjoy or suffer. Thus, there is no change. No change of what? No change of identity. True identity. The gross body, which isn't us, turns into dust. But still, all the desires, that's the meaning of adishtayam manishtayam vishaya upasevate from the Bhagavad Gita. All the desires are carried by this subtle body. And according to the nature of those desires, whether the desires are gross, subtle, material, or deeply, deeply spiritual, one will obtain a corresponding body. And continuity exists. Text 61. Here's an example that Narada Muni gives. The living entity, while dreaming, gives up the actual living body. In other words, actual living body means the body that he inhabits. Is that true? Do you have that experience? Sometimes, because you asked about dreaming. But here there's going to be several verses on dreaming. The living entity, when he goes down to sleep, he goes somewhere else. He engages in many adventures, some miserable, some terrifying, some pleasurable. But his body, his gross body, is lying there on the bed. Through the activities of his mind and intelligence, he acts in another body, either as a god or a dog. After giving up this gross body, after giving up this gross body, the living entity enters either an animal body or a demigod's body on this planet or another planet. He thus enjoys the results of the actions of his past life. That we are different from our gross body, and we are more intimately connected with the subtle body, is that which Narada Muni wants to explain to King Pratini Barishat, because we heard about the gross body and how it traps us and how it ultimately causes us misery. But now we're going to hear about the subtle body. And this, and listen to Prabhupada's purport, I found it very striking. The conclusion is that the subtle body, mind, intelligence, and ego, creates an atmosphere with desires and ambitions that the living entity enjoys in the subtle body. An atmosphere. How can one describe the subtle energy, subtle material energy that pervades the body, the gross body? Prabhupada calls it here, it creates an atmosphere, a mood almost. And each gross body, for one to get a gross body, one needs a particular mood in one's subtle body. Actually, the living entity is in the subtle body. Even though the gross body apparently changes, and even though he inhabits the gross body on various planets. So that's there, but actually the living entity is situated in the subtle body. All the activities performed by the living entity in the subtle body are called illusion because they are not permanent. So this section is going to be attacking our identification with the subtle body, because we have become terrified from hearing the previous chapters about identifying with the gross body, because that identification means such an incredible amount of suffering for the living entity and being turned to dust or stool or ashes, as Prabhupada would say. That's the fate of the gross body. But this identification with the subtle body is still more dangerous, in a sense. Liberation, Prabhupada explains, and why? Because the subtle body isn't us any more than the gross body is us. Liberation means getting out of the clutches of the subtle body. Liberation from the gross body simply involves the transmigration of the soul from one gross body to another. So in that sense, it is very easy. If you want to get liberated from the gross body, all you have to do is wait, whether it's 20 years or 30 years or 50 years or 70 years. Just wait, you'll be liberated from that. But that doesn't give true liberation, because we are still trapped by the subtle body. And this is where the trouble really lies. Mind, intelligence, and ego. Altogether, these can be known as the citta. The Bhagavatam, I think it's the 25th chapter in the third canto, describes how there is 26. There is one energy actually, and it's called different things depending upon how it's used, the usage. And this is the citta, either the consciousness, material consciousness, or false ego, or mind, or intelligence. Prabhupada continues, when the mind is educated in Krishna consciousness, or higher consciousness, in the mode of goodness, one is transferred either to the upper heavenly planets, or to the spiritual world, the Vaikuntha planets. Now, which do you want to go to? The heaven. Let me tell you about the heavenly planets. It's really, really nice. And even yes, it's really, really nice. What's in the heavenly planets? Somaras. Yes. The Nandanandana garden. The sweetest of music coming everywhere. Very, very, really subtle. And one has no anxiety in one's life, practically speaking. And they're the most beautiful, beautiful apsaras there, too.
No pregnancy.
Yes, this is right until the end of one's life. Then one gives birth to a child. This is basically when people, religious people, talking about going to heaven, this is what they want. But there is one thing missing. Of course, there's ultimately it's in the material world, so the pleasures one achieves there don't have anything to do really with the spiritual world. But Krishna is not. But if one places one's consciousness so subtly in the mode of goodness, one will be drawn to a body on that level. It will happen. This is material piety and its result. But there is no Krishna. And therefore, Marachitraketu, when he was a Vidyadhara, says, Swaga apavagana rakeshu apituliyarta darshana. That for someone who is dear to Lord Narayan, who has a relationship with Krishna, swaga, this type of heaven, apavaga, liberation, or naraka, what is narak? Hell. They're the same. And on the other hand, as Prabodhananda Saraswati says, as we've been saying over the last few days, if one is a devotee, Vishwapurna Sukhayate, the whole universe is full of happiness, material universe even, because practically speaking, one is not in the material universe if one is a devotee. One, Prabhupada continues, one therefore has to change his consciousness by cultivating knowledge received from the Vedic instructions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the disciplic succession. If we train the subtle body in this life by always thinking about Krishna, we will be transferred to Krishna Loka after leaving the subtle, the gross body. We will actually, as Kapila Muni has described, we will dissolve the subtle body. And therefore, only bhakti gets at the core of our material existence, because it gets to the subtlest covering over the living entity on the material level is this false ego. And based on the false ego, the living entity builds the subtle body, which is meant for enjoyment. And the false ego, as we have been saying, is placing ourself in the center of existence with a spirit of enjoyment. And then based on the subtle body, then the gross body is accumulated. So bhakti, Krishna consciousness, devotional service, gets to the heart of false ego and changes. And it must change for it to be effective. It changes the self-conception. Ego means self-conception or identity. It changes the self-conception from the materialist self-conception that I am the center of existence, Ishwaraham Aham Bhogi Siddham Balavan Sukhi, to what? Yes, Jivera Sarupoi Krishna. Jivera Sarupoi. Krishna Niti Das, Gopi Bharata, Parakamalaya, Das, Dasana Das. So this is the depth that Krishna consciousness must reach. We must be purified to that level. So if we train the subtle body In this life, by always thinking about Krishna, we will transfer to Krishna Loka after leaving the gross body. This is confirmed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Janma karma chame dibhyam evam yo veti tad fatad chakfadeyam punar janma naiti mameti so arjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but he attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Thus, the change of the gross body is not very important. But the change of the subtle body is important. The Krishna consciousness movement is educating people to enlighten the subtle body. That word enlighten is such a nice word in English. It means adding light, removing darkness. The darkness of the subtle body is so many misidentifications. And the light of the subtle body is the proper identification with Krishna in the mood of Krishna bhakti rasato bhavato mati, in Krishna consciousness, in devotion. Tasting that sweetness. Prabhupada continues. The perfect example in this regard is Ambarish Maharaj, who always engaged his mind on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Savai mana Krishna parara vindayo. Similarly, in this life, we should always fix our mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, who is present in his Archa Vigraha, the incarnation of the deity in the temple. We should always engage in his worship. So not just fixing the mind, but also actively serve. But as Krishna tells Arjuna, mam anusmara yudhyacha, first you remember me, and then based on the devotional thinking, then serve. And then it is actually devotion. Then it is actually seva. If we engage, so we should also always engage in his worship. If we engage our speech in describing the activities of the Lord, and our ears in hearing about his pastimes, and if we follow the regulative principles to keep the mind intact for advancing in Krishna consciousness, that's why we follow the rules and regulations. To keep the mind intact for advancing in Krishna consciousness. What does Prabhupada mean by keeping the mind intact? Huh? No? Undiverted? Okay.
Concentrated.
But, yeah, intact. Yeah? No more further? Yeah, removing the... In other words, keep the mind. When one follows the rules and regulation, the mind becomes healthy and therefore able to think about Krishna, which is the purpose of it. And if the mind doesn't follow the rules and regulations, there's so much passion and so much ignorance that will infect the mind that there is no question of always thinking about Krishna. So to keep the mind healthy, intact for advancing in Krishna consciousness, and if we do this, Prabhupada concludes the sentence by saying, and the part of the purport that we'll read here, we shall certainly be elevated to the spiritual platform. And then right at the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, the prescription for returning home back to Godhead is given by the Lord Himself in the Bhagavad Gita. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhiji mam namaskuru mam evasyasyupvayavam apmanam apparayanam. Always think of me and become my devotee. So that means think of me with devotion. Worship me, and that means worship me with devotion. And offer your homage to me, being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. So this is Krishna consciousness. So to fill our subtle body, our mind, our full consciousness, only with the thought of Krishna and Krishna's service is the cultivation of Krishna consciousness. This is Krishna Anashilanam. So this, in summary, more or less is what is the goal and what to do, and the rest of the verses and purports will explain details on this. So 62. The living entity labors under the bodily conception of I am this and I am that. My duty is this, and therefore I shall do it. These are all mental impressions. And all these activities are temporary. Nonetheless, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entity gets a chance to execute all his mental concoctions. Thus he gets another body. So he acts based on who his conception of himself. We see this sometimes. Sometimes that you see that there was, you find a lady or a man, a lady who was very, very beautiful when she was young, perhaps, or a man who was very, very strong and handsome in his youth. But then when they're very, very, very old, you can see that they carry with them the same conception in their mind that I am beautiful, or I am strong, I am handsome. You can see that on their face. They have a certain self-confidence. Although the beauty or the handsomeness is completely gone, it's now just wrinkles. But still, they're carrying their self-conception with them. And based on what we add to our self-conception in our life of who I am, I'm the kind of person who deserves this, I'm the kind of person who's powerful, I'm the kind of person that I have no faith in myself. Whatever it is, our self-conception, that's adhishtayam manashtayam vishaya. That will carry us to our next body at death. So devotees, or aspiring devotees, when we read this, we want to develop a self-conception in relationship to our service of Krishna, of Guru and Krishna, Sri Guru Gauranga, Krishna. This is what we want to develop. This is the cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Because again, what these self-conceptions that we develop in our life will determine our next body. And if we are pure and full of great love for Krishna, that conception will cause a spiritual body, us to blossom into our actual spiritual body. And if we have a doggish mentality, a tiger-like mentality, a bird-like mentality, a worm-like mentality, a mosquito-like mentality, these will determine our next body. So what kind of mentality we develop is so important. And this all occurs not by our power, but bharta bhokta maheshwaram paramatmiti chapyakto dehesmin purushapara, by the grace of the Supersoul. Ishvara savabhutanam. Within every body is the Supersoul who allows us all to go on. So now, interesting. 63. One can understand the mental or conscious position of a living entity by the activities of two kinds of senses, the knowledge-acquiring senses and the executive senses, the working senses and the knowledge-acquiring senses. So according to what a person is doing, the activities that he's performing with his senses, both knowledge-acquiring and working senses, one can understand his mind. So the subtle can be understood by studying the gross. And similarly, by the mental condition or a consciousness of a person, one can understand his position in the previous life. So by studying the external activities, the physical activities, you can understand someone's mind. And then one can think, what kind of activities have gotten this person that kind of mind? in his previous life, what kind of activities in his previous life would have given birth to that kind of mind, then in that sense one can understand what someone's previous life by that kind of study. This is the business. Learned transcendentalists can understand subtle things in this way. 64. Sometimes we suddenly experience something that was never experienced in the present body by sight or hearing. Sometimes we see such things suddenly in a dream. So sometimes in this life we experience such incredible things that we have never experienced before on the subtle level. And sometimes we dream about things that we have never experienced in this life. And this is because the mind is carrying all these experiences. Like I told you about that dream I had with carrying the axes, the sadhu. Carrying one axe in one hand and walking and then being attacked by a tiger. Now certainly that never happened to me in this life. But this is a composite of experiences from previous lives. Or some subtle experiences in this life. So the mind stores all these thoughts. And therefore we should be so careful what we allow to come into the mind. So careful. Why? Because we have to experience these things throughout this life and perhaps even our next life or even 10 lives. We may get some impression that we see something and it may take us 10 lives of achieving it in the material world to get it. So we should be very, very careful on the material level. And similarly on the spiritual level, if we get very, very deep, desires on the spiritual level, even though they may be very small and seed-like, they ultimately will come to their fruition. They will ultimately bring us the results. So therefore the conclusion is, as much as possible, we should saturate our consciousness with Krishna consciousness. And as much as we are possibly able, avoid placing materialistic desires, especially desires within the heart, because the desires will lead us to future bodies. So we should become filled with Krishna consciousness. And how to do that? How to remove? This again is what Sanat Kumar had explained, that we want to become detached from the bodily concept of life and develop an attachment for Krishna. So how to do that? That is the process of Krishna consciousness. There's the cleansing part and the cultivation part through the chanting, through the association, through the holy dham, through the deities, through the hearing, Srimad Bhagavatam, and through the service. 65. Therefore, Narada continues to tell the king, my dear king, the living entity who has a subtle mental covering develops all kinds of thoughts and images because of his previous body, the activities he performed in his previous body. Pious, impious, spiritual, gross, subtle, all kinds of desires. Sometimes you read about these children, like perhaps it was Mozart or someone, when he was 5 years old or 7 years old, he composed his first symphony, something like that. Incredible. Where does this come from? He's carrying so much. Or when Mukunda Maharaj, when he was just Mukunda Das, he said he told Prabhupada that he wanted to go to India to learn how to play the sitar. This was just in the early 26th Second Avenue days. And Prabhupada's reply was, that takes many lives. So where does this come from? These desires and these things that one learns and the tendencies. I remember things that even happened to me. When I was 12 years old, that there, or even before, there are certain tendencies that come, that's come so strongly, you know, good and bad, that they're being carried from a previous life. Attractions, repulsions, fears, they're carried from previous lives. Because what we develop in a previous life, we have to fulfill in this life. So therefore, what we're understanding is to be very careful with the gross body, yes, but with the subtle body. And this is the cultivation, where the cultivation of Krishna consciousness really takes place. My dear king, the living entity who has a subtle mental covering develops all kinds of thoughts and images because of his previous body. Take this from me, Narada Muni says, as certain. There is no possibility of concocting anything mentally without having perceived it in the previous body. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, we'll read perhaps half of his purport, some of the points that we've just been speaking about. Krishna bahya mukha haya bhogavanchakari nikatastha maya tare japatiyandare. Actually, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is the Supreme Enjoyer. One quotation, it was from, it was a C.S. Lewis quotation where someone asked, it was a very, very pious, incredibly logical Christian author. Someone asked, what the difference between hell, asked him what the difference between hell and heaven was. And he said that hell, in hell, everyone is thinking, in heaven, everyone is thinking, thy will be done. Krishna, God's will, you're the center, you're the enjoyer. And in hell, everyone is thinking, my will be done. This is the difference between false ego and real ego, real Krishna consciousness. And if you're not sure which one is which, ask me after the class. So, when a living entity wants to imitate him, Krishna, the enjoyer, he is given a chance to satisfy his false desire to lord it over material nature. That is the beginning of his downfall. As long as he is within the material atmosphere, this material atmosphere, he has a subtle vehicle in the form of the mind, which is the stockpile of all kinds of material desires. Such desires become manifest in different bodily forms. Sri Narada Muni requests the king to accept this fact from him because Narada is an authority. The conclusion is that the mind is the storehouse of our past desires, and we have this present body due to our past desires. Similarly, whatever we desire in this present body will be expressed in a future body. In other words, everything is added to this. All the desires that we accumulate in this life are added to the treasure house of desires, the big bag that we carry around known as the mind and the subtle body. So the mind actually stores our karma in the form of desires. This is so important for our progress in spiritual life. Our desires are stored and they will dictate our future. The mind is the source of different kinds of bodies, including the spiritual body. So therefore, when the mind, for one whose mind is fixed on Krishna, his mind becomes the dearest of friends for him. If he has an attraction for Krishna and if he's cultivating that attraction, because the mind's only business is attraction and repulsion. So if somehow or another the point of attraction for Krishna is cultivated, that becomes the mind becomes his greatest friend. And if attraction from matter and maya is cultivated, that means the mind is cultivating something that's going to bring him so much suffering. So therefore the conclusion basically here is coming to that we should engage always. Because remember that this is all leading up to these are the instructions that are required to purify us and to guide us so that we can attain the highest spiritual position of Goloka Vrindavan. So this is very, very important. And this is practically speaking the only place or one of the few places where such detailed instructions on how to deal with the mind are given. Always fill the mind with Krishna. Always become busy in Krishna's service. And remember in that purport where the mind's desires, this was back in Preetam Raj, the mind's desires were compared to a river. And the way to overcome the flowing river of material desires, and those desires in the river were like sharks. And does anyone remember the example that Prabhupada used how to overcome that? I'll give you a hint. If you remember, if you've been to Dwarka, it will help you understand what the example is, what it was. Yes?
The desire of the ocean would push back the current of the river.
Yeah, it would overcome it. So the ocean is our desire for Krishna consciousness. Because although, and this came out so many times previously in the earlier chapters, although we were requested to give up the attachments on the bodily level, that too can only be done by Param Dvistvanavartite, by the overflowing, the overflooding of the Krishna conscious desires, of the ocean of spiritual desires. So thus the mind indicates the past and future desires. The mind is the cause of the living entities attaining a certain kind of body. In accordance with his association with material nature. According to one's mental composition, one can understand what the living entity was in his past life, as well as what kind of body he will have in the future by knowing someone's mind. You don't need even astrology to know one's future and past births. You just have to see someone's mind, because the mind will dictate the future birth, and the mind indicates the previous birth and the previous activities. Just the mind indicates the past and future bodies. So what we are trying to do is minimize the mind's material desires. Therefore, Prabhupada would say simple living and high thinking, high Krishna conscious thinking, full of loving desires for service for Krishna. So now, more on this. Sometimes in a dream, we see something never experienced or heard of in this life, but all these incidents have been experienced at different times, in different places, and in different conditions. The mind of the living entity continues to exist in various gross bodies, and according to one's desires for sense gratification, the mind records different thoughts. The mind is like clay, soft clay, especially when one is young. And whatever impressions one places in that clay, you have them in this life and future lives. In the mind, these appear, these records appear together in different combinations. Therefore, these images sometimes appear as things never seen or heard before. So this is like we were saying with the dreams. Prabhupada's purport. This is about one-third of the way down. The transmigration of the soul is caused by the subtle body, which is the storehouse of all kinds of material desires. Unless one is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, material desires will come and go. This is the nature of the mind, thinking, feeling, and willing. As long as the mind is not engaged in meditation on the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, the mind will desire so many material enjoyments. Sensual images are recorded in the mind in chronological order, and they become manifest one after another. Therefore, the living entity has to accept one body after another. The mind plans material enjoyment, and the gross body serves as the instrument to realize such desires and plans. The mind is the platform onto which all desires come and go. Srila Narottama Das Thakur therefore sings, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chete Te Koriya Kya Arna Koriyo Mane Asha. Narottama Das Thakur advises everyone to stick to the principle of carrying out the orders of the spiritual master. One should not desire anything else. Chitta te koriya aikya, to make one's mind one with one's spiritual master's mind. If the regulative principles ordered by the spiritual master are followed rigidly, the mind will gradually be trained to desire nothing but the service of Krishna. Such training is the perfection of life. So this is the basic principles, the general principle, how to engage the mind in Krishna's service so that the desires for Krishna's service increase, and the desires and materialistic, selfish desires based on false ego, they become null and void, they are minimized. Just in, as a matter of course, one time in I had the fortune of being with Prabhupada in Fiji, and although there are general instructions that Prabhupada gave everyone, yet there is individuality. So, and anyway, what Prabhupada explained, there was one devotee there who was criticizing another devotee in a little indirectly, saying, because Prabhupada was so fond of book distribution, and he said, what about some devotees who aren't interested in book distribution but are only interested in farms or farming or something like that? And he wished to elicit a criticism from Prabhupada of this devotee. And that moved. And Prabhupada's reply was not at all a criticism, but he said, do you think that the spiritual master is a dull stone who cannot instruct different disciples in different ways? That was his response. Because there are common principles and there are individual ones that are tailored specifically for individual devotees. For what purpose? In the context of what we just heard. For what purpose? To become absorbed. Now this is the point. To become absorbed in Krishna conscious desires. And this every devotee needs. Otherwise, the river of material desires will be too strong. And they will dictate and force them to take another birth. So everyone needs something to become in Krishna consciousness. Within the four walls of Prabhupada's instructions. Not that we concoct something, but we all need something to become extremely enthusiastic about in Krishna's service. Otherwise, we will not be able to remain absorbed. So this is one of the great keys, and Rupa Goswami also said that utsahan, enthusiasm, is required for absorption. Text 69 continues. Krishna consciousness means constantly associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in such a mental state that the devotee can observe the cosmic manifestation exactly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead does. Now, this is a very esoteric verse. Prabhupada explains it. And Adi, perhaps you can look at this one and see if there's anything in it that will make it clearer too. Listen to this. Krishna consciousness means constantly associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in such a mental state that the devotee can observe the cosmic manifestation exactly as the Supreme Personality of Godhead does. Such observation is not always possible, but it becomes manifest exactly like the dark planet known as Rahu, which is observed in the presence of the full moon. Indirectly, it's observed. So here's Prabhupada's purport. Now, if someone also remembers, might remember, there's something that Prabhupada will say here, that if I didn't have time to look for the reference, but when I believe, I'll read a bit and then I'll mention this, and maybe someone else, you can look it up on the computer too, in the database. I'll read and then I'll ask the question. It has been explained in the previous verse that all desires on the mental platform become visible one after another. Sometimes, however, by the supreme will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the whole stockpile can be visible and all at one time. In other words, by Krishna's desire, the whole previous material desire of existence, one can see it. When a person is fully in Brahma Samhita, 554, it is said, Karmani nirdahati kintucha bhakti bhajam. When a person is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, his stockpile of material desires is minimized. Indeed, the desires no longer fructify in the form of gross bodies. Instead, the stockpile of desires becomes visible on the mental platform by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it can be dismissed. Now, if I remember correctly, there was a time when Prabhupada said, I think it was in the time when he was living alone in Vrindavan, if I'm not mistaken. He said something to the effect, or it reminded me of this, that he said this actually happened to him. This is that he saw the, and it was about, if I remember correctly from the Prabhupada Lilamrita, it was about the time when he was talking of, when he wrote his Vrindavan Bhajan, this one poem he wrote at that time in Bengali, on the occasion of the Vyasa Puja of his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But there's something quite similar to this that, if I remember correctly, he said. Does anyone remember that? Yes, that was. But that wasn't the one I'm talking about, but that also happened. Anyway, if someone could take a look, or I'll look later. So Prabhupada continues a bit later. When one is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, in one stroke he is freed of past and future mental desires. Then by the grace of the Supreme Lord, everything becomes simultaneously manifest within the mind. In this regard, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur cites the example of Mother Yasoda seeing the whole cosmic manifestation within the mouth of Lord Krishna. By the grace of Lord Krishna, Mother Yasoda saw all the universes and planets within the mouth of Krishna. Similarly, by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, a Krishna-conscious person can see all his dormant desires at one time and finish all his future transmigrations. This facility is especially given to the devotee to make his path clear for returning home back to Godhead. Did you have anything about that verse?
Yeah. One thing is that one comes to Krishna, he can see everything as Krishna sees. And he gives the example of Mother Yashoda, just as we heard the sound.
But then he says that one who is not worthy of approaching Krishna, not the Guru, then he will see the darkness, just like one sees Rahu during the lunar eclipse.
Could you send that one to me, too? Did you find the reference to Prabhupada? Okay. Let's go on. When the living entity, now, this is this is text 70. As long as there exists the subtle material body composed of intelligence, mind, senses, sense objects and the reactions of the material qualities, the consciousness of false identification and its relative objective, the gross body, exists as well. So as long as the subtle body exists, which is, and it exists carrying these material desires, then the gross material body will also exist. Because the gross material body is based on the subtle body. So as long as we have these material desires, the gross body will also come and exist. Now, in 71 through 73, there are some examples given to help break our complete identification of the gross body and the subtle body being the same. Because right now, I say, I just hold the gross body tightly, I pinch it over here, and I feel pain. So there is a complete line between me, the soul, my subtle body, including my consciousness, which is expanded within the gross body, and the gross body. So those three or four things are seen as one. The fourth thing is the object of the sense gratification, the sense object. So we really identify the soul influenced by the mind, wants to enjoy something, an object of the sense, and then the gross body is there. So these all together become us, practically speaking. We have a full identification with these. So these examples that Narada is going to give, they are meant to break our full identification of with the subtle body and with the gross body. 71. So I'll read them and then we'll speak about them. When the living entity is in deep sleep, or when he faints, when there is some great shock on account of severe loss, at the time of death, or when the body temperature is very high, so all these different circumstances, the movement of the life air is arrested, it is stopped. So when all these extreme circumstances occur, death or a shock, if you're walking somewhere and something happens that terrifies you. You get such a shock. Or at the time of death, this is a stopping of the life air from flowing in the body. And what does that do? At that time, the living entity loses knowledge of identifying the body of the self. Suddenly, one doesn't exist as a body anymore. One exists only in one's mind. Once the identification that we usually carry around because of the circulation of the life air of myself, my subtle body, of me as the subtle body, and the subtle body as the gross body, at times like that, those are broken. So if they can be broken at times like that, that means that there is no identity, true identity, or between you, the soul, and the gross body, which is surrounding the soul, or the gross, and the subtle body, which surrounds the soul, and the gross body, which surrounds the the subtle body. So those circumstances, we don't experience ourselves as a gross body. Or if when, I don't know if any of you have ever had an operation. Some have, I know. A heavy operation and gone into the anesthetic. And then when you're coming out, the anesthetic has dulled your identification with the gross body. And first you come out just being a subtle body and completely disoriented and not knowing where you are. Raise your hand if you've ever had a heavy operation and experienced that. Yeah, well, that's almost everyone, or 50%. And what that does, it through the agent, the anesthetizing agent, the chemical, it stops, must stop the life air from circulating properly. And then to get to, it takes hours sometimes, or days sometimes, before the life air circulates and the identification, even the mayic identification of the subtle, you with the subtle body and the subtle body with the gross body again occurs. So if it can be broken, it's not truly us. Even if it can be broken for some time, it's not truly us. Another example, this is text 72. When one is in youth, all the 10 senses and the mind are completely visible. So there's a full manifestation when one's a young man, 15, 16. All the manifestations of the senses and mind, in other words, he desires to enjoy on a mature level. They're all visible. However, in the mother's womb, or in the boyhood state, the sense organs and the mind remain covered. Just as the full moon is covered by the darkness of the dark moon night. So, at that time, when the senses are undeveloped, the living entity's identification with the gross body, the senses, and the subtle body is covered. And therefore, if the objects of the senses are placed right in front of him, if there's a beautiful woman placed in front of a young boy, he becomes agitated. But the same soul may be there, but when that beautiful woman is placed in front of someone who's just a child, a small baby, nothing happens because the development is covered. So the soul, the person, is different from both the mind, the subtle body, and the gross body, and the sense objects, because he doesn't have a complete correlation. Is there anything written about this one? No. It's a very, 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 very tricky point. I found it very not easy to understand. But these three verses or examples are trying to show us, as Prabhupada explains, because of the absence of desires in the subtle body, in the baby in the womb, or the very young child, there may be no development in the gross body. So the subtle body affects the gross body, and the gross body will affect the subtle body. There is not a complete harmony between them. They are not the same. What to speak of the person, the soul, himself being the same as both of those. And then the final example in 73. When the living entity dreams, the sense objects are not actually present. So here's a reverse example. When the sense objects are present, a beautiful woman is present in front of a three-year-old child, because of the lack of development of the gross body, his mind isn't developed. And therefore he doesn't look at it as an object, the beautiful woman as an object of enjoyment. But then, on the other hand, in dreaming, even if a sense object isn't present on the gross level, if it's present on the subtle level, it's just the same thing. The person can become agitated. So there is not a direct correlation between the soul, subtle body, gross body, and sense object, even though when I see my beautiful chair. If someone else sits in it, I may get very disturbed. Or my computer, especially with computers, or my money. If someone touches my money or my family members or something, or everything that I invest, I place my concept of self in, it causes me pain and I get disturbed. But these things are temporarily connected with me, and in different circumstances they have no connection with me, as the examples show. So we line up the soul, who is me, with the subtle body, identify with the desires of the subtle body, and then they are manifest through the vehicle of the gross body and extend to the objects of the senses. And this is the field of activity, the expanded field of activity, practically speaking, the body and whatever it can enjoy. So we have a sense of self over all those things. And the subtlest one of those is the subtle body. And Narada Muni is trying to break our conception of identification with all of those for the purpose of increasing our identification with being Krishna's servant and developing our attachment to Krishna. 74. So these circumstances, such as the shock or the heavy fever or the anesthesia, these temporarily break our connection with these things. But we don't want a temporary breaking. We want a full, complete breaking of the identification with the sense objects, with the gross body, and with the subtle body. So how to do that? 74. Because then the question is, so if the soul is not either the subtle body, the gross body, or the sense objects, what is he? What is he? So here it describes in 74 that the soul is just covered by all these things. The five sense objects, the five sense organs, the five knowledge acquiring senses, and the mind are the 16 material expansions. Interesting phrase, expansions of the soul. Expansions through this identification. These combine with the living entity and are influenced by the three modes of material nature. Thus the existence of the conditioned soul is understood. So this is who I am when I am a conditioned soul. I'm the sense objects, the sense organs, and all these really exist all in the subtle body. All this identification all exists in the subtle body. Prabhupada explains that point right at the end of his purport. According to Srimad-Vacharya, when consciousness, the living force in the heart, is agitated by the three modes of material nature, then the subtle body of the living entity, consisting of the mind, the sense subject, the five senses that acquire knowledge, and the five senses for acting in the material condition, become possible. So the three modes of material nature affect the consciousness, the citta. And all this comes into play, these subtle forces that exist in the subtle body, and move us into action and fully delude us into thinking this is us. And the subtlest of these subtle senses is the false ego, this false identification, especially with the body, and even more subtle with that I am the enjoyer. I am the enjoyer. I am the center. This existence is meant for me. And if you try to interfere with me being the center of existence, then you become my enemy. And if you cooperate, then you're my friend. So this is all the influence of the three modes of material nature. And this is the core of the soul's illusion. And what we want to do, and what bhakti is to do, is to break that sense of identity The false sense of identity should be dissolved in the words of Kapila Muni, so that the real sense of identity of being Krishna's servant can blossom forward. How to do that? 75. By virtue of the processes of the subtle body, the living entity develops and gives up gross body. So this is, and again, this is these teachings, as Vishwanath said, and we heard yesterday, because Prachini Barishat wasn't qualified to hear directly bhakti, this is jnana misra bhakti, but required so that we can develop a detachment from these things. But this type of knowledge, because full bhakti is Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam, directly about Krishna. But this is required, helpful, because it will break our, through this knowledge we can get direction and how to and gradually dissolve our material existence. So by the virtue of the processes of the subtle body, the living entity develops and gives up gross bodies. This is known as the transmigration of the soul. Thus, the soul becomes subjected to different types of so-called enjoyment, limitation, fear, happiness, and unhappiness. And how to break this fully, Prabhupada explains it here. According to this explanation, one can clearly understand that originally the living entity was as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his pure spiritual existence. However, when the mind becomes polluted by desires for sense gratification in the material world, the living entity drops into the material condition, as explained in this verse. Thus he begins his material existence, which means that he transmigrates from one body to another and becomes more and more entangled in material existence. The process of Krishna consciousness, by which one always thinks of Krishna, is the transcendental process by which one can revert to his original spiritual existence. Devotional service means always thinking of Krishna. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam evyashyasi satyam te pratijane priyosime. Always think of me and become my devotee. Worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. One should always be engaged in the Lord's devotional service, as recommended in the Archana Marg. One should worship the deity in the temple and constantly offer obeisances to the spiritual master and the deity. These processes are recommended to one who actually wants to become free from material entanglement. Modern psychologists can study the actions of the mind, thinking, feeling, and willing, but they are unable to go deep into the matter. This is due to their lack of knowledge and to their not being associated with the liberated Acharya. Okay, we'll stop here. But it continues, Narada Muni continues just for a few more verses and then the chapter will be concluded. And if Krishna allows, we shall conclude that chapter tomorrow. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jay, Sri Narada Muni ki jay, Sri Prabhupada ki jay, Gaura Bhaktavinda ki jay.